We are joined right now by a senior writer for CBS Sports. You've also heard him on the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast. He covered the NBA draft for CBS Sports HQ. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, good morning. What's going on, Matt? How are you?
It's always great to be with you, Jim. Doing fine. And, yeah, that was quite the experience last night. And we got the benefit, not for him, but for the rest of us, some good drama with Michael Porter Jr. dropping all the way down to 14 with Denver.
No doubt. I'm going to get to that in 1 second, but you actually started off with where I wanted to go. Matt, you were at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn last night. What was the atmosphere like in that building, and what was the whole experience like for you?
It's always a good time because Knicks fans take over the Nets building and certainly bring a lot of anticipation and a good environment overall. I got to say, though, we're getting a little over the top with this whole green room experience. I don't know if the television production of this broadcasted, but each of the players got introduced, which was kind of a cool moment, but it was kind of a bit drawn out, just a little bit. And we had 19 players invited to the green room, which is great. Like, everyone should get that experience, but at a certain point, it gets really crowded. It almost felt like a mosh pit at a rock concert before this thing got rolling. But in general, good vibe, good times overall, and a number of players who didn't get the green room invite, of course, showed up nonetheless, sat in the stands, and waited on their names to get picked, which is always a little bit awkward for the guys who get invited to the green room, and then you watch someone walk out of the stands, down the steps, and strut across the stage before you get your name called.
No doubt. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, so ordinarily I would start at the very top, but since you mentioned Michael Porter Jr., let me get your thoughts on that, because that was one of the biggest stories. His slide all the way down to Denver at number 14. The guy's played less than 60 minutes of college basketball. So for those who have never seen a healthy Michael Porter Jr. play, how would you describe his game?
You know what, Jim? He got a lot of blowback, and I asked him last night face-to-face for him to clarify some of this on CBS Sports HQ, but when he was asked what his game compares to, he said, listen, sometimes people compare me to a little bit of Kevin Durant, a little bit of Giannis and all that. The truth is, when I saw Michael Porter Jr. play before getting to Missouri, he looked like a future number one, number two, number three pick. There was just no doubt about it. He had the size. He had the skill. If you want to take some sort of, you know, level below combination of what Durant is capable of and what Jason Tatum showed a lot of in his rookie year, Michael Porter Jr. is capable of that. He can get to the rim. He can shoot from deep. He can post up. He can face up. He handles the ball well. A pretty solid defender overall. But now, see, I find this ultra fascinating because he was a victim of, I think, some conspiracy-type doubt about his injuries. And then his ego was put on trial publicly in the week leading up to this. And clearly, all this had a huge compound impact. It was unimaginable in October to picture Michael Porter Jr. not being like a top three, top four pick at worst. And then if you factored in the injuries but said he was still mostly healthy by the time we got to draft night, Jim, still would have had to figure he would have been a top 10 guy, but he takes a huge drop. And I was sitting next to him. Basically, his table was right up against the back of the green room, and my media seat was all 8 feet from him. And it was stoic. It was a little bit quiet at times, and his agent, Mark Bartlesy, even had to say after Philadelphia picked, he gave him kind of a generous look and a smile and said, Michael, you know, you doing all right now? And he was, but he said later, like, you know, it was stressful, and all my friends kept getting picked, and you're just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, and now we get to see what's going to happen with this. One, how soon is he going to play? I asked him if he was going to play in summer league, if he was good to go. He would not answer that directly, so we wait and see. But he said his hip was pain-free. And what if we look 4 years from now and Michael Porter Jr. is one of the top three prospects in this draft? This goes down as really one of the all-time gaffes by a number of franchises. And at the same time, you can't totally blame him for doing that. But I don't know if there's really any excuse to letting him fall to the double digits because his ceiling is so high. And he has such great star potential. It's still hard to fathom how so many teams passed on him. And the Clippers passed on him twice.
Of course.
It's unimaginable to me.
Of course. Matt Norlander joining us. I love that notion also of his agent saying, you doing all right? Do I look like I'm doing all right? I was going to go number one before I got hurt. Now I'm at number 14. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, Matt, what about the top of the draft? The Suns make DeAndre Ayton their first pick. Not a surprise at all. How do you think he's going to fit in with them?
I think he's going to do pretty well, and I think he's actually really benefited by the fact that Mikal Bridges is going to Phoenix now as well. And just a quick side note on that, you know, Bridges grew up in Philadelphia, obviously played for Villanova. His mother works for the Philadelphia 76ers, And that camp was so excited. And then I caught them all rocking Phoenix Suns lids about 10 to 15 minutes after that trade happened. And they just collectively looked a little bit shell-shocked. That's kind of something no one really saw behind the scenes. Regardless, Phoenix is a really good player and such a good complementary piece on defense to Ayton, who I think is going to be a fairly reliable player pretty immediately. And obviously he brings big-time star potential. I think he's going to grow into a top. You know what's funny? I heard you talking about MB going after Ayton on Twitter, which is absolutely hilarious. But one of my projections here with Ayton is I think we'll look up for about 4 years from now, and he'll be a top 25 type player on defense in the NBA. I just think he's too impressive physically, too athletically gifted for him not to take advantage of that. So it might be true that he's got some spotty issues with his defense overall. But Embiid might have been a little bit too quick with the trigger finger there on Twitter.
We're talking to Matt Norlander. All right, Matt, let me ask you about the Cavs. They take Colin Sexton from Alabama. He immediately went to work on trying to pitch LeBron on staying in Cleveland. Do you think that that is a pick that's going to move the needle for LeBron?
I don't think so, at least not right now. And honestly, like, you know, remember when the Cavs were, you know, got Andrew Wiggins and that didn't move the needle whatsoever, and Wiggins had so much hype coming into the league, and LeBron was like, no, we're not doing this. Like, I need Kevin Love if we're going to try and make this happen. And Colin Sexton is not nearly the prospect coming out of college that Wiggins was and doesn't bring nearly the amount of hype. But I will say that if they are able to get Sexton into a gym with LeBron in the coming days, he'll win him over immediately because he can create plays off the bounce. He's a very athletic player. He's extremely competitive, like undeniably really one of the more competitive players I've seen come onto the college scene in the past 6 or 7 years. So he wins them over there. But beyond this, Jim, if LeBron leaves Cleveland, what the Cavs wound up doing is they drafted a player who is not a big scorer. Like, I just don't think this is ultimately a net positive for them going forward if they don't have LeBron. I think if LeBron stays, this is a nice complimentary piece. It was interesting to see the way things unfolded because prior to the draft getting going, when I saw Trae Young walk in looking like Angus Young, everyone thought, okay, this dude's going to go to the Cavs. It's a lock because he's mocking. He's basically mimicking what LeBron did prior to the NBA Finals, but it wasn't that. Trae Young instead obviously goes with the Hawks.
Nope, that did not work out like that. So listen, one last thought, Matt. One of the other stories of the draft is the return of Puma as a presence in the basketball kicks game. What have you made of how they've thrown themselves in the back, right back into the endorsement game?
It has been fascinating on a number of levels, and I've spoken with quite a few people about this, just in terms of how aggressive they've been with this and how successful they've been. And by the way, Michael Porter Jr. is a Puma client along with DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley III. And Puma obviously had no vision of one of their biggest signees dropping so far. But for them to do this on the heels and in the midst of a major FBI investigation, obviously into college basketball and recruiting and how shoe companies can muddy those waters so much, it's caught the eye of a lot of people. And they're going to be, you know, fully aggressive with this going forward. I expect Puma to try and get in the grassroots game. I think we'll look up 2-3 years from now and we'll see Marvin Bagley and DeAndre Ayton and Michael Porter Jr. could very easily all have non-scholastic / AAU teams named after them. And I got to admit, it's a little bit refreshing just to get another competitor into the fold here. I also thought it was interesting that Nike struck out on all those guys. Nike didn't get Trae Young. You know, Trae Young goes to Adidas after Puma initially gave them a massive bid early and kind of forced other shoe companies to go on after him as well. So it'll be intriguing. I think this will probably be something where they're able to stick because of the Jay-Z influence, and that really can't be overstated, Jim. The fact that Jay-Z, who, by the way, is also affiliated with Roc Nation, so perhaps some conflicts of interest there, but nonetheless, you have that kind of star power. I think it does have legitimate pull with a lot of these guys who want to be known not just for their skills on the basketball court, but things that they can do outside of it. I think that's more and more a point of emphasis with these players.
I think you're right. He's a senior writer for CBS Sports. You've also heard him on the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast. Once again, covering the NBA draft for CBS Sports HQ. Matt, great job. Good to have you back, bud.
Have a wonderful weekend, Jim. Thank you.
You too, Matt. See you then. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so you want to talk about the NBA draft. Anything you saw last night? Who went where? Who didn't go where? What you thought about the night? Do you like what your team did? And I've got a lot more to get to there, too. That's a great start.